is Tim McNally. Welcome to the Dine, Wine, and Spirits Show, NOLA Drinks Edition. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody, welcome to the NOLA Drinks Show. Brian Diaz here with you. Welcome to the unofficial start of the weekend here in the Crescent City. Thanks for tuning in today, friends. Friends, I'm going to tell you, if I can't have the type of guests and talk about the things that I want to talk about on this show, I'm gonna take to Twitter and I'm gonna say, build this show. That's what I'm gonna do. And if we're not gonna do it that way, then I'm gonna shut it down. I'm gonna shut the NOLA Drinks show down. Oh wait, no. It's my show. I can actually have on whoever I want to have on and talk about whatever I want. So never mind. Hey, we got a good show for you today, friends. Thanks for tuning in. Really appreciate it. What we're going to do today is we're going to talk a little bit about some stuff, again, some more interviews that we culled from Tales of the Cocktail. Yes, a bit of a common refrain lately, but we talked to so many interesting people during Tales of the Cocktail. Just a wealth of information, wonderful producers, brand ambassadors, different people, and we're nearly done running through all the stuff that that we recorded, folks that we talked to. This was another great round of interviews that we're playing today. All independent spirit producers, some really interesting conversations. First up, we're going to talk with Julian Ducos of Terra K Armagnac. If you're not familiar with Armagnac, very similar in concept to cognac, neighboring region. There are a couple very distinct and important differences. Julian's very clear on pointing those out. So we talk about some of the distinction of Armagnac, how it's different from cognac. And here in the city, of course, cognac, and really by extension then Armagnac, can be it builds much of the foundation of the classic New Orleans cocktails going back into the 19th century and even beyond. Many of the classic original New Orleans stuff, some of the French 75, some of these different drinks that we've had for a long time, they were originally made with cognac. Now maybe they're more commonly made with whiskey, rye whiskey, these sorts of things. But cognac often was the original base. We have a drink that we were just talking about on Instagram, our post yesterday, about the Vu Carré cocktail. If you're not following us on Instagram, check it out. It's just NOLA Drinks. That drink, the Vu Carré, of course, a reference to the French Quarter, was invented in the 1930s at the Hotel Monteleone there on Royal Street. Originally, that drink was served on the rocks when it was created. A lot of people now prefer it up. That was kind of what we were talking about. But there's a good example of a drink that basically most of the time when people make it, it incorporates both rye whiskey and cognac. So we're going to talk a little bit about Armagnac, its cousin, probably sibling is a better way to put it. Very, very interesting. And then we have Henry and Nicole Price, along with Claudia Bailoni, who are all with Price Imports, a really interesting craft spirit, independent spirit importer. Henry and his daughter Nicole started the business, and Henry has we'll talk about this history, so I won't go into it, but a long connection into the business. For example, his dad was the guy who brought Jägermeister into the country. So there you go, Luxardo also. So we talk a lot about some of the things from their portfolio, chase through some very interesting things. Some of the stuff's available here in Louisiana, certainly available if you're listening in other places in different parts of the world, and more to come from them. Great conversation there. And then we close things out with one of my favorite spirits categories these days, cachaça. A lot of people, we want to say, we kind of get into this a little bit too, it's sort of like, think about a cousin or sibling to rum, or people will say it's a Brazilian rum. It's made in Brazil. It's really not rum. Probably the closest example would be rum agricole, which is produced from the fresh cane juice. There's no molasses going on. And cachaça is made a bit differently. And we talk with Luke McKinley and Agenor Macari, from Novo Fogo Cachaça, which is a beautiful brand. We tasted a bunch of their stuff. They have something like a dozen cachaças. We interview those two guys. Agenor is actually the master distiller, and Luke is the marketing guy for the company. Agenor is based in Brazil. Luke is based in Seattle. But we talk here at Tales of the Cocktail in New Orleans about what is cachaça. We taste some stuff. Really, really interesting. They're both really interesting guys, really fun guys to talk to. So that's pretty much the show. We're not going to actually close anything out because that's going to be the last interview. We'll pop back in here to say goodbye. But there you go. Friends, wanted to mention a couple things out there. We also have a Flipboard magazine. So if you're on Flipboard, very cool. Glad you're on Flipboard. Just search for NOLA Drinks. We put a lot of stuff in there, both local New Orleans stuff, sometimes quirky stuff, stuff from the world of food and drink, as we like to do. As you know, we like to say we explore the world of drink and food here in New Orleans and beyond, and our Flipboard magazine is reflective of that. So I wanted to highlight that. But what I wanted to mention, interesting thing that we just put in there last night, An interview from an, I believe it's an online publication called Afar, A-F-A-R, like Afar, Afar Away, afar.com. It's a travel website, and I don't think it's a print magazine, just online. But there's a brief article interview called Uncovering the Heart and Soul of New Orleans Classic Cuisine. And in it, they interview the famous food historian, educator, and author Jessica B. Harris. Very, very knowledgeable woman about stuff in New Orleans. A lot of her specialty is looking into the African influence of food and culture here in this part of the world, which is obviously major. And it's a really quick read. Check it out. It's very interesting. But she talks about how, you know, here in New Orleans, and it's reflective of the food. This is something that we talk about here, as you know, friends, all the time on the show, that it's a tapestry here. We talk about drink and food and music, and they're all sort of woven together. Ms. Harris certainly refers to that here. But she talks about how, in this case with the food, that you see the three braids, as she puts it, of the three principal cultural areas that are the bedrock here in New Orleans, the northernmost city of the Caribbean, as we like to say. So we see the European stuff, the French, Spanish, Sicilian, and Italian influence. Of course, those all have their individual components. The African influence, which is also varied, you know, from different parts of Africa where people were from originally, or their cultures were from. And then also, of course, the Native American influence. And we talk a little bit about that. She is asked what the most representative dish here is in New Orleans. She says gumbo. Of course, we know that because it traces its roots all the way back to Africa before it showed up here. All of the European influence on some of the ingredients. And then, of course, the Native American influence being filet powder, which is made from the sassafras tree. There was a really interesting piece related to that, and I was trying to find it online for you, y'all, and I have not been able to do so. It was in the New Orleans Advocate on Sunday, and it was actually produced in conjunction with the Historic New Orleans Collection. I'm going to try and find this. But talking about the origins of filet powder and, you know, talking about how, like, the Europeans and the African Americans over here came into contact with it by at least the early 1700s. The Choctaw Indians, Native Americans from this part of the world, used it widely in food as a dried powder. It was incorporated as a thickening agent into gumbo, which, again, as I mentioned, traces its roots back to African food. And there you go. So that's kind of that whole thing, that whole tapestry, that whole interweaving of food and culture and everything else that we have here in New Orleans. But check that out on Flipboard. It's a really interesting interview, brief, again, as I said, with Jessica B. Harris. Another thing that kind of relates to that is Ian McNulty over there, also at The Advocate, had a piece a couple days ago on the 22nd talking about a dozen years after Hurricane Katrina, why even, quote, lost restaurants have a way of sticking with us. And I think there's some interesting points that Ian makes in the article talking about how, you know, our collective memory here, whether, you know, you've been here for a long time, you've been here for a short time, a lot of this does center around that tapestry that I talk about, food, drink, music, and some of these places that no longer exist. And he lists a bunch, I won't do that here, that maybe have new operations in, and these things are still part of what we talk about. It's still here. It's still present in the culture. It still shapes some of our memories, and it shapes much of the culture here. So Ian's piece is pretty cool. I'd like to have him on the show in the near future to talk about some of these things that he likes to write about. But check that out. If you go to the New Orleans version of The Advocate there, go back a couple days, you'll see Ian's piece. Again, a dozen years after Hurricane Katrina, why even lost restaurants have a way of sticking with us. Pretty interesting stuff. Also, some local beer news, friends. Beta Brewing Company is also, this is also reported in The Advocate actually today. Beta Brew Company is among the major craft breweries caught up in a quote-unquote vortex of falling sales and a glut of competition. Actually, this was originally reported, in the Wall Street Journal. Beta sales are apparently down about 8.8% from last year, or for last year. And, you know, they're talking about different independents like Beta, some of the larger guys, Boston Beer, that's the folks, those are the folks that make Sam Adams. They're being squeezed by niche microbreweries. And then I think really one of the major effects, of course, too, is all these big guys, Anheuser-Busch, InBev, Molson Coors, snapping up a lot of these small independent microbreweries, craft breweries, if you will. And that's really on these small to mid-sized independents, making it very difficult. Retail sales of craft beer dropped by $143 million to $2.3 billion in the first half of 2017. Quite a bit of a squeeze. Craft beer shipments had actually enjoyed an increase of double digits for years. We've talked about that on the show before, but the demand began to slow in 2016. Now, I think this is somewhat typical of a maturing market. You know, now craft beer has been kind of a thing now for 10, 15 years. It had enjoyed that double-digit growth, and now it's kind of slowing down. I think it's to be expected, but but I think that we're going to start seeing some of the repercussions of that here in Southeast Louisiana. I believe we have something like 33 breweries. That's a lot. And it's maybe going to be tough for all of them to make it, especially with these different pressures that are going on and these sorts of things. I hate to use the word saturation sometimes. I think it gets overused. I think it's appropriate times. I don't know if we're at that point yet, but beer is a tough game. And now we're seeing a huge uptick in distilleries around here, all again looming against the background of these huge houses, big beer people, big spirits people snapping these guys up, and more kind of coming down the pipeline. So, you know, point is, get out and support your local folks. They help support our tax base. They provide local jobs, people reflecting their culture because they're doing it here on the ground. Friends, again, good show. A lot of Tales of the Cocktail stuff coming up. Stay tuned. We're going to take a little break and be back with a whole host of interviews here on the NOLA Drink Show. Friends, come on back.
Oregon wines are taking over New Orleans. The reason? They're delicious. Next time you're shopping for wine, grab a bottle of Sass Wine. Located in the South Salem Hills of Oregon's Willamette Valley, Sass Wine produces small amounts of handcrafted, high-quality wines that include Pinot Noir, Pinot Blanc, Pinot Gris, Chardonnay, Riesling, Sauvignon Blanc, and Rosé of Syrah. A perfect balance of full fruit with fine, supple tannins and firm acidity is what makes truly great wines, and you'll find that in every bottle of Sass Wine you drink.
Time for lunch? We've got you covered at Sobu.
Chef Juan Carlos whipped up special two-course lunches that start at $14.
Try our Creole Cuban sandwich and pair it with a bowl of our gumbo.
Of course, Sobu's full menu is also available.
And don't forget Sobu's version of Commander's Palace 25-cent martinis.
Available Monday through Friday, 11:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m.
Join us at Sobu for our speedy lunch at 310 Charter Street in the Quarter.
Complimentary parking next door at the W Hotel.
Sobu, life is meant to be lived, not endured.
Savory crab meat cheesecake and decadent white chocolate bread pudding are Palace Cafe originals. For nearly 26 years, Palace Cafe has been serving award-winning cuisine in the historic Warline Music Building. Located on Canal Street at the edge of the French Quarter, Palace Cafe is open 7 days a week for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and open for jazz brunch on the weekends. Make sure to try one of their refined classic cocktails or a glass of wine from their nationally recognized wine list. Palace Cafe is located at 605 Canal Street.
Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and podcast world, wherever you may be. Tales of the Cocktail 2017 coverage rolls on. We're here at Sylvain on Charter Street in the French Quarter, shouting distance from Jackson Square. Thanks to Robert LeBlanc and LeBlanc Smith Restaurant Group and the team here at Sylvain for letting us actually parachute in here and record over 3 days of Tales. It's been great. Pleased to be joined by my next guest, Julian from Tarake Armagnac. Julian, welcome. Yeah, you can just, it's radio, man, so you have to talk.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for welcoming me and for giving me the chance to speak about Armagnac today with you.
Absolutely, it's my pleasure. You were gracious enough. You hosted a dinner at Herb Saint a couple nights ago, Wednesday evening, and a lovely dinner and a very nice presentation. Thank you for including us in that.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure for us to have you. And to be able to share our Armagnacs with some amazing food from New Orleans.
Great, and it was a great match. So the variations in the different Armagnacs that you have are very diverse, and it was a good example of the diversity, and then pairing it with meals to showcase the diversity of what it is that you have.
I think that of course Armagnac basically originally is a digestive. But pairing some food with Armagnac, making some cocktails, is also a part of right now the spirits culture and also the Armagnac culture. We have seen especially in the U.S. that people consumers were more and more interested by craft spirits, and so also by Armagnac, mm-hmm. which is a real artisanal spirit, as a digestive, but also paired with food, in cocktails, etc., etc. So we are very happy to be able to show and let people discover the different ways of using Armagnac.
Mm-hmm. Now, Julian, since you raise a very interesting point, are you seeing more success with Armagnac because people are starting to use it in cocktails more as opposed to simply being consumed as a digestif? Do you think that's been helping?
It helps.
Okay.
It helps a lot. It definitely helps. Of course, most of the people we meet when I'm traveling to the U.S. and still consider Armagnac as a digestif, but all this first, as I said, this craft spirit trend, but also this craft cocktail trend helps a lot the Armagnac. You know that, I'm sure you know that, and a lot of the bartenders know that. Before the Prohibition, a lot of the cocktails were made with Armagnac and cognac.
Right.
When the Prohibition came, the borders were closed to the Armagnac and the cognac. So some very smart people replaced those spirits by their own product, which is own spirits, which is normal. And we really see from several years that the bartenders are really willing to discover what was the old-fashioned, the original taste of the cocktails made with Armagnac and cognac also. So we are seeing more and more bartenders making Sazerac, sidecars, old fashioned, vieux carré, vieux rectangle, right. etc. with our Armagnacs. And this is really something we like, we encourage. And it also allows us to touch much more category of people, new beginners, new drinkers, younger people.
Right.
This is also important for us.
And thank you for raising those points. As people listening to the show here in New Orleans probably know that many of the original classic New Orleans cocktails were made with cognac as kind of the more tradition. Well, let me ask you that question since we're on that, because some people out there probably listening go, well, I've heard of cognac and I've maybe heard of Armagnac, some different region. And so can you tell people just quickly what are some key differences between cognac and Armagnac, both in where it's made and how it's made?
You're right. So there is several differences. First, the similarities. Armagnac and cognac are both brandies made with grapes. They are both the result of a distillation of wine made with grapes. The main difference are, first, the region. The cognac is made in Charente,
right,
north of Bordeaux, if I take this city as the reference.
The mark, yep.
And Armagnac is made in Gascogne. So just for you to know and also for your audience, Gascogne is the birthplace of the Three Musketeers.
Right.
D'Artagnan.
I am familiar.
You know the story of Alexandre Dumas. Uh-huh. It's also the birthplace of the foie gras.
Right.
You have to imagine that in Gascogne, we are 150,000 people for 5 million ducks. So you can imagine the size of the foie gras culture and the gastronomy culture. We have a real also in Gascony, a real what we call a French paradox, which means that we did some studies and we have noticed that people in Gascony are living older and in better health, for sure thanks to the what we call the eau de vie, the water eau de vie. Of life, is the Armagnac. So Gascony is an addition of different different cultures, gastronomy, Armagnac, literature, etc. One of the main differences between cognac and Armagnac is that, to be a very basic, what is good for a cognac or what is good for an Armagnac will be bad for a cognac producer. So this is why for us it's difficult to compare cognac and Armagnac. So first, cognac is mainly made with one grape called Uni Blanc.
Uni Blanc, yep.
in Armagnac, we use different grapes, several grapes, which are named Uniblanc, Colombard, Baco, Folle Blanche, or Plan de Grèce. So, saying that, you can imagine that there is more diversity in the Armagnac region, depending on the grapes used, the producers, etc. The other difference is the distillation. Armagnac is a distillation of wine, and it's a double distillation of wine. This is cognac. And Armagnac is a single distillation of wine. Saying that, the goal for a cognac producer will be to distill twice in order to remove a lot of the bad aromas, bad aromatics, but also the good aromatics from the wine.
Yep.
So we can say that a cognac producer will focus the quality of his cognacs on the aging. Mm-hmm. The aging is very important.
Right.
When in Armagnac, doing a single distillation, so we distill until 54-55% of alcohol, allows us to keep much more fruit flavors, wine flavors,
more of the phenolics.
You're right, more minerals, lipids,
right,
everything. Because you know, when you do a distillation, when you distill at 55%, what is interesting is the 45%, the remaining 45%.
Right.
So we can say that Armagnac will be closer, will have closer to a wine, closer to the fruit, will have more texture, structure, will be also more rustic than a cognac. And we see, especially today, that people are really interested by Armagnac, by discovering all those flavors from the grape, from the wine, etc.
One of the things that you mentioned here, and we were talking about Wednesday evening, is, and we're going to take a break here in just a second, Julian, but the importance of the winemaking is critically important in all this. And then as well, so then it becomes, by virtue of that, by definition, the winemaking and the terroir are two key components in Armagnac. Well, let's do this. We're going to take a little break here on the Noel Drink Show, then we're going to come back, talk a little bit more about some of the production, and we're going to actually taste some of Julian's lovely Armagnacs from Terra K. Come on back.
Are you looking for a great place to enjoy great handcrafted and vintage cocktails? Victory is located at 339 Barone Street in the heart of downtown New Orleans. We have a variety of spirits, a talented team of bartenders, and great gourmet small plates. Our mission? To preserve an era when cocktails were made with artistry and pride. Grab your friends and come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. Give us a call to book your next private event or go to our website, victorynola.com. See you soon. Cheers.
Did you know that there's a vineyard and winery making quality table wines just 1 hour north of New Orleans? At Pontchartrain Vineyards, we produce award-winning wines from our 15-acre vineyard, as well as premium wine grapes sourced from the West Coast. Try our light, crisp, Louisiana-grown Blanc du Bois, or have a glass of Chardonnay, Zinfandel, or our Cab Syrah blend made right here in Louisiana. There's something for everyone at Pontchartrain Vineyards. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Hi, this is Kevin Richards with New Orleans' own Sazerac Company, makers of Sazerac Rye Whiskey. In case you haven't noticed, rye whiskey is hot, flying off store shelves and dominating the bar scene in New Orleans and around the country. Rye's spicy and assertive character is drawing in those looking for whiskey with a bite, but that equally pairs well with cocktails. Enjoy it in cocktails like the Old Fashioned or Manhattan, or simply savor it on the rocks. Sazerac Rye Whiskey, the way New Orleans does whiskey.
Hello, this is Ron Bartholomew, and to my great city of New Orleans, I'd like to introduce to you Touch Vodka. This artisan handcrafted ultra-premium vodka is uniquely distilled from Florida's finest wildflower honey and American grain. Touch also produces key lime, Valencia orange, and ruby red grapefruit selections that are infused with natural oils of locally sourced fruit, which results in a unique 80-proof vodka with no sugar added or coloring. Touch is now available at Doranax, Cello's, and the Corporation Grill & Bar, and many other locations across Louisiana. This holiday season, sit back and relax and enjoy Touch Vodka.
Hi, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy, suggesting that great handcrafted Pinot Noir from Oregon doesn't need to be expensive. Consider Yamhill Valley Vineyard Estate Pinot Noir from the oldest family estate in the Willamette Valley of Oregon. It's rich, ripe, wonderfully balanced, and it's only about $20 at your favorite New Orleans wine shop. Yamhill Valley Vineyard, Top quality doesn't need to be expensive if you know what to drink. Ask for it wherever you buy wine. Cheers.
Everyone, we got to get together now. Oh, yeah, love's the only thing that matters.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Nola Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans. Thanks for tuning into the show today. We are here at Sylvain, as you know, and we are recording here covering our Tales of the Cocktail 2017 version. Pleased to be joined by Julien Ducos from Terrake Armagnac. Julien, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much again for welcoming me today.
Absolutely. And so, Julien, we're tasting some of your Armagnac's lovely things. And tell us a little bit about the first one that we're tasting, the XO.
Yes. The XO, first I will talk about what we call the traditional range, which means the VS, the VSOP, and the XO. You have to know first that all our Armagnacs, and this is a point which is important for us, are totally natural. There is no sugar, there is no caramel, there is nothing added, and the color comes exclusively from the aging in French oak barrels. So we have a first, what we call an entry-level quality, which is the VS quality, which has to be aged the minimum of 18 months, and we age it for 5 years already, so it could be a VSOP. And then after, we have a VSOP that the minimum requirement is an aging of 4 years, and we age it for 7 years. And here, you are tasting the XO. The minimum aging for an XO is 6 years, and this XO is aged for 15 years.
For 15 years.
Yeah, so we more than double the aging on the XO. One of the reasons is that we don't add any sugar, any caramel to bring the boisé, the woody taste. Mm-hmm. So the only way to give this taste to our Armagnac is to age them for a longer time than the minimum. So this XO is on the prune, some apricot, zest of orange. What I like also in this XO is that you are really starting to get what we call the rancio taste given by the aging. So you will be on some pastry notes like the crème brûlée, the tarte tatin, the brioche, some
cooking
toffee.
Toffee. Right.
That you don't get on the VS on the VSOP because they are still very fruity. They are young. So I would recommend the VS as a good base for a cocktail, mm-hmm. or the VSOP as a digestif. But if you don't have a lot of time, like 25 or 30 minutes, and the XO, you need a bit more time because you need also to look at what will be the evolution into the glass. It will be more complex, a bit richer.
Julien, what are the grapes in this case that are used in the XO?
The grapes are Uni Blanc and Baco. So there is 60% of Uni Blanc, 40% of Baco. We are the last appellation to use Baco. We are really proud of these grapes. We are a family-owned estate. The Château du Tariquet is owned by the family Grassa. And we make Armagnac since 1683. The Armagnac being the oldest eau de vie from Europe. We mm-hmm. discovered documents at the Vatican.
Really? Interesting.
Which are proving that Armagnac were already existing in 1310, so 700 years and more, but probably more, we don't know. So it means that everything is made at the estate. We plant the vines, we grow the vines, we harvest the grapes, we do the wine. We distill, we age, and we bottle also at the estate.
Let me ask you this question, Julien. So, say in the case of this being 60% and 40%, is there some variation in certain years because of the changes in the variation of the grape harvest with the blend, or do you guys stick to that blend?
We are trying to stick to this blend because this is the concept of those qualities, the VS, the VSOP, and the XO. Those qualities are made to have a constant quality year after year. The best compliment that a consumer will give me will be like in 10 years later, in 10 years, if he has a glass of the Domaine de Château du Tariquet XO, that he tells me, this is really the quality I'm remembering 10 years ago.
And the consistency.
So
then,
consistency, the quality, the freshness, the same identity is the key for those qualities. We have other qualities on which we are working more on the specificity, the characteristics, etc.
Okay.
Like the vintage Armagnacs. But on those qualities, we are working on the constancy, for sure.
Okay, great.
And tell us now about the next one that we're tasting, the 1995.
So the next one is the vintage 1995. And I just told you that we are Armagnac growers. So it means that we don't buy anything. So you can be sure that when we do a vintage, we only do the vintage, produce those vintage when the years are... when we think that the years are really good.
And really good and can stand on their own, right, and yes. Showcase the vintage itself.
So we think that we cannot do, for example, we cannot do more than like two vintages per decade. So we have done 1994, 1995. We don't know if we will do other vintages in the 90s, probably not. So this vintage is the 1995. The rules are a bit different between the XO. A vintage Armagnac has to be aged as an ordage, so the minimum is 10 years,
okay,
and not 6 years as for an XO. Also, a vintage Armagnac needs to be a cask strength quality. So there is no dilution.
Okay,
so
yeah.
in the XO, there is a dilution. So the XO is at 40%, so 80 proof, when the Château du Tariquet vintage Armagnac 1995 is at 45.8%. So it's a cask strength.
Now, why is that the case? Why is the cask strength required?
Because what you are looking for with a vintage is the specificity of the vintage.
Okay.
This is the characteristic. And when you dilute an Armagnac, you can also dilute those characteristics.
Right.
So this is really the concept of the vintage Armagnac, is to preserve, to protect all the characteristics from this unique vintage on a limited production. Work on the rarity, and when the stock is gone, the stock is gone.
The stock is gone. I'm sure this must be exciting to be able to, when the opportunity seems to make sense to do a single vintage, must be very exciting for you.
It's very exciting. We can have a small idea when we harvest, when we do the distillation of the vintage, but we never know until the end of the aging. So it's always a real surprise, a discovery for us. So it's like a baby that you are carrying for a long time, and then it is.
Now, is there perhaps a moment when you're tasting and you all look at each other and say, yes, this can be?
for sure, but it also takes time. Mm-hmm. We don't say to each other like in seconds, oh, this is what we want. No, it takes time. It's making Armagnac, you know, it's a long-term production.
Absolutely.
What you are tasting today has been made by the previous generation.
Right.
And the generation of our generation will start drinking the Armagnacs we are making probably at the end of our career. So it's a journey. It's a real journey when you make an Armagnac, and it's important that the time is important, because what you will like today, probably like in 6 months, you will not be the same. You will not be in the same mood. It will not be what you are into it, what you like.
Right.
In 6 months, 1 year. So we take the time to really appreciate, select the qualities which are corresponding to the feeling of the previous generation of the family Grassa, but also the qualities which are also matching with the history of the family Grassa, and also the future, the legacy
we'll
the
go.
Family Grassa wants to let to the next generation.
Right, that's great. We have about 2 minutes left, Julien. So tell us quickly about the Blanche that we're tasting.
So the Blanche Armagnac.
Unique, huh?
Yeah, the Blanche Armagnac is very unique. This is a white spirit. There is no aging. There is no color. It's an AOC. It's a real appellation d'origine contrôlée,
yep.
Blanche Armagnac, which has been created in 2005. So this is the last appellation created in the wine and the spirits category in France. The Blanche can be produced with all the grapes allowed in the Armagnac region. At the estate, at the Château du Tariquet, we have the chance to be the biggest owners of the Folle Blanche grape in the Bas Armagnac appellation.
And this is 100% Folle Blanche.
It's a 100% Folle Blanche grape. The Folle Blanche gives a lot of the fruitiness, freshness, a lot of the characteristics, identities, and a lot of the spiciness also to this product.
I get a little, actually some tropical fruit.
yes, notes on this?
For sure. You will taste some pineapple, tropical fruits, pear, peach, some fresh watermelon, some also a bit of anise and a bit of spiciness. We like to drink it chilled, frozen, like vodka, for example.
Nice and cold.
With some blue cheese, smoked salmon, sushi, sashimi, or also with some fish eggs like salmon roe, or if you are lucky, with some caviar.
Great.
But also in cocktails. In cocktails, it's also very interesting. A blanche with tonic. You can make also a mojito, a tiponche.
Sure, a tiponche, okay.
Caipirinha, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, Julian, do me a favor. We need to. We actually need to wrap it up and go to a break. Can you tell us very quickly, where can we find information online? What's the website?
So our website is tarique.com.
TARIQUET.com.
This is it. And so this is the website. On the website, you can you can see some videos done by drones, and you can virtually visit the estate.
Great.
But I mean, the best thing to do is to move and to visit us. So you will be more than welcome, you and your listeners, to come at the estate in Gascony.
We'll take you up on that, Julian. Thank you so much.
I really appreciate it.
Thank you for sharing
again,
the story, and that's
my
pleasure.
It's been a real pleasure.
Armagnac, likewise.
And thank you so much again for giving me the chance to speak about Armagnac.
Absolutely.
Today.
Thank you, friends. Friends, hey, we're going to take a break on the Noel Drink Show. Come on back.
Hey, ladies. Are you looking for wine to bring to your next girls' night out? Grab a bottle of Capitello wines and enjoy the taste of fruit from Oregon's Willamette Valley. Capitello has a wide variety of wines to choose from. Sauvignon Blanc, Pinot Noir, dessert wine, and a Brut Sparkling that's a blend of Pinot Noir and Chardonnay. He'll even stop by next time he's in town. So grab the girls, have fun, and enjoy Capitello wine. Cheers.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in the Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region. Producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood. Or our bold, rich Petit Sirah, excellent with steak. To our flagship Bordeaux-style blend, Supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
Hi, I'm Dickie Brennan, and I'd like to invite you to our new Black Duck Bar located on the second floor of Palace Cafe. Named after the Prohibition's infamous rum runner, the Black Duck features over 120 rums as well as an extensive tequila collection. In addition, acclaimed master French chef Rene Bageau heads up the small plates and charcuterie kitchen. Join us for happy hour Monday through Friday from 4 to 7 p.m. with half-price small plates, local draft beer, and tap wine.
Things are okay with me these days. Got a good job, got a good office. I got a new wife, got a new life, and the family is fine.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Noel Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you on WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you are. Yeah, we're covering Tales of the Cocktail 2017, as you know. We are at the finish line, and we've saved a really excellent tasting here that we're doing on Saturday evening. Pleased to be joined by Henry and Nicole Price from Price Imports. Welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having us on the show. We really appreciate it. So
absolutely.
A little bit of background on us. So current company is called Price Imports, and the Price family's been in business in the United States doing liquor specialty programs, products since 1961. So we immigrated here from Germany, and my father then started the company here and brought in small brands like Jägermeister and other
really
things.
Small brands like Jägermeister.
Really small brands. Of course, they were really small when we were selling them.
Yeah.
And over the years, I think, you know, now today I actually run around and tell people that there probably isn't a bar you can go to that there isn't a product that we introduced or still represent.
That's interesting. And you had an interesting story, Henry, too, that we were talking about. We don't have to spend too much detail on this, but you have a long history in the business. You used to have a company that we've also probably all heard of as well.
Yeah, it was called Price International. So it started with my father's company, Eric Price Company. Then I had, at 24, I knew everything, so I started a company. That didn't go so well, and we shut that down in 87, but I started up again a few months later and created Price Imports, which is probably a company that quite a few mixology, bartender, people in the industry know about. And that's now been 43 years since I started.
That's great. Now you have the opportunity to work with your daughter, Nicole.
Yeah.
Getting into the business.
Absolutely. In 2008, Price Imports was sold, and at that time I was still a college student, so I left, did my own thing for a while. 2010, the owners folded that into Anchor Distilling, Anchor Brewery, which has much of the history and legacy of my father in this industry today still. So after a while of doing my own thing, I said, hey, I have to be back in this industry. It's just absolutely what I love. I love the social aspect, the culture aspect, and supporting other small families. So my dad and I started this together, and I wouldn't have it any other way.
That's great. Are you pretty much a two-person operation then, or do you have a...
No, we really, we have a team. You know, we have a small team, and we also strategically partner with another company out of California called Pacific Edge Wines and Spirits. They have imports, plus they have wholesale operations in California, Arizona, Nevada, and they carry our entire portfolio, those poor guys, in all three markets, because it's a big portfolio. Yeah. I'm sure we have over 200 products today.
Wow. And is the emphasis on spirits primarily? Do you guys do wine and that sort of thing too?
We only do fortified wine in the form of vermouth.
Yep.
And let me think. Do we have something besides vermouth right now in fortified wine? We have a mead. We have Lindisfarne mead, which is the original mead from England. Mm-hmm. But that's it. You know, if it's something in wine, then it relates to something that's going to be used with spirits.
Right.
And we really don't. We have a wine division, but we're closing it down.
Okay, gotcha. Well, you guys tell us a little bit about what are we tasting first here? You guys have a really lovely representation here, and we're going to dabble. So what are we tasting?
We're going to dabble, and I thought I'd bring a few of the products out of the menu we showed this week. The very first thing that you have in your hand is a historical Russian product called Pelugar, which means half burnt. And it is, up until 1895, it's a product that everybody in Russia drank, and it was distilled by 3,000 different distillers. And when the Russians in 1895 closed private distilleries, they no longer allowed it to be made. The Rodinov family then wanted to bring the old category back. So they call it the father of vodka, brother of whiskey, because it's made like whiskey, and it was around before vodka. That's a beautifully smooth product. It's egg white fining, which usually you only see in the highest end wines.
Right.
And that gives it that nice silky texture, triple distilled. The one you're tasting has caraway in it.
I was noticing that on the label.
Noticed.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
you can taste
probably
it.
Even though we're not tasting it out of the most ideal stemware there, still you get a nice bready aroma from it. Mm-hmm. It's not like regular vodka that you would think, so because it is a pot distillate, triple distilled.
Okay, and a really nice spicy, like the spicy seed note
right?
on
and
it.
And very, very silky smooth.
Yeah, absolutely. This is really nice. And is this the only one, Pelugar?
No, we actually have seven of them.
Okay.
So range, the numbered range, as we call it, 1 through 4, is a range that's wheat and rye distillate. And we have a pepper and garlic. We have the caraway that you're tasting. And we have an allspice. Then we have what's called a classic range, which is a straight wheat, a straight rye, and a single malt rye. And they're very much like whiskey tasting, and they're very smooth, as you know, noticed by the one you're sampling.
Absolutely.
So they really don't need the aging. They do some aged ones. We haven't brought any over here.
I get where you're going with that, Henry, because it's getting the cleanness of the spice and things like that. You're just going to, you know how people are. They get in the way of things with wood use.
Yeah, and also I think, you know what, you really are getting a very clean product here, you know, really clean, really flavorful. And I like to refer to it, for those people in the know, an eau de vie grain.
Yeah,
right. A really fine distillate of grain where the flavors of the grain are totally captured. Mm-hmm. And actually a fun thing to do, which is hard to do when you're on the radio because nobody sees it, but you put a little of this in your hand and you rub your hands hard until they get nice and hot and warm, and it totally evaporates because it's a clean spirit.
Right.
Then you cup your hand and you put your nose in there, and you will definitely go, that came right out of the oven. That's rye bread.
Interesting.
And it's that always gets them.
Yeah.
If nothing else gets them about the product, when I do that little number, that gets them.
It's always good.
Because you wouldn't
like
get that out of vodka. You wouldn't get it out of rye whiskey. Wouldn't get it out of corn whiskey. You'd still get a nice subtle aroma. But here, because of the pot distillation, which really draws on the, you know, on capturing the flavors. You get that, and it's amazing. There's no other product like it.
Interesting. Well, what are we tasting next? Let's do another one here.
All right. Well, let's do another one. Let's do something from the whole opposite side of the world. Let's
do some Sotol.
Sotol.
Yeah, absolutely.
So this Sotol is from Chihuahua.
Mm-hmm.
You've got three states in Mexico that allow the product to be made and called Sotol. That's Coahuila, which we don't have one from there yet, but we will. And then we have one from the other two regions, which are Durango and Chihuahua.
Right.
And there's, from what we just personally learned, because we had the suppliers here, there's actually five species of the desert spoon. Seven species.
Seven
of the
species. Thank you, Nicole. There's seven species.
This is why you have partners, so you can be properly corrected. So we're going to do that actually as well. We are going to bring that in. You know, I see a real opportunity. Sort of what we do. We're willing to jump in and go a little bit further, not try to build one brand to be giant volume, but try to build the category and in that sense become a real leader in that category.
Do you think that with the growing popularity of Mezcal, then being the close cousin that Sotol is, can kind of draft off that a little bit? You know,
I think that's a really good comment, and yes, absolutely. We started with the approval process on this brand well over a year ago, and even then there was still somewhat mild demand and resistance. We got the shipment in. I don't think we sat on the shipment a month, and it was sold out.
I do notice that especially the Mezcal category here in New Orleans anyway has really expanded in the past year and a half, 2 years, and I see a little bit more of Sotol sitting on shelves both on and off premise because that gateway has been Mezcal.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Our competitors here in the U.S. right now only have them from Chihuahua, and they have just this distillery and plant. So we're really the first to come in with one from Durango, and we're going to be the first to come in with them aged from various regions and altitudes around the three states.
That's exciting. That's really, really exciting and really, really enjoyable. Well, let's do this, y'all. We're going to change up our schedule here slightly on what we talked about before we went on the air, as long as this works for you guys. We'll talk about it in a second. We're going to take a break. We're going to do some planning, which, as anyone out there knows, we never do on the NOLA Drink Show. So we're going to do a little bit of that, friends. So come on back.
Looking to shake things up or find the bartender in you? We mean literally. At the New Orleans Drink Lab, you'll do just that. We teach you the history and tradition of classic New Orleans cocktails. Then you get behind the bar and make them. Master classes are fun, interactive, and hands-on. Great for small groups and team building. Come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. You mix, muddle, and master the art of cocktail making. Visit us at 343 Barone Street. Or go to our website, drinklabnola.com.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region, producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood, or our bold, rich Petite Sirah, excellent with steak, to our flagship Bordeaux-style blend, Supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
With the season's beautiful weather, it's a perfect time to take a drive across Lake Pontchartrain and visit New Orleans' only local vineyard and winery, Pontchartrain Vineyards. Our tasting room is open Wednesday through Sunday from noon till 4, or by appointment. Come enjoy a flight of our wines in our classically styled French Provençal tasting room, or pack a picnic lunch and enjoy a bottle of wine on our patio overlooking the vineyard. While you're there, ask about our wine club. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Hey, New Orleans, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy. If you're listening to this show, you love good food and good wine. And a great wine with our plentiful fresh Gulf seafood is the Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc, a crisp, balanced white blend from the south of France. Whether it's with fresh oysters, crab, redfish, or shrimp, this Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc will not disappoint, and it's a great value at around $14. Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc. Cheers!
Everybody, welcome back to the NOLA Drink
Show. Ryan Diaz here with you. Thanks for tuning in today. And hey, if you're hearing it on the radio, if you're hearing the podcast, always appreciate it. No matter how you're listening to the Nola Drinks Show, pleased to be chatting with Henry and Nicole Price from Price Imports. Really lovely line of things. We're having a fun conversation here in between these segments. And as we were talking about during the break, a very hot category, as we know, is Amaro. And you have brought us a very unique German Amaro, which is, and Nicole, you are going to take this one on, I think.
Sure. This is an apothecary product. Aromatique is the name. Aromatique used to be a category of its own. When the war started happening and Russia came in and took over that part of Germany, they took over all of the companies. And slowly a lot of the aromatique distilleries had died out. Then when Germany came in and they bought back that portion of the company, the Russian government allowed people to go ahead and buy the company back. Today, this is the only one that is still existing.
It's really, really interesting. When we think Amaro, obviously it's a very broad category, right, as we know.
Absolutely.
But as you guys mentioned, that there's it's all spices, so there's no no botanicals, right?
Yeah, there's no herbs. It's 100% spice. Mm-hmm. They're macerated for a little over a month. It's very pure and clean. It's a great digestive. It's wonderful in cocktails. It can be used from everything from just adding a little bit of bitterness to becoming like a mainstay in your cocktail. I love using it as glazes on a ham or with marinating meats with it. There's so much flavor. I did a beer float using this product.
That's a great idea. I could see that actually. What kind of beer did you use, out of curiosity?
I used a cream ale.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
makes a lot
so
of sense.
I did that with a little aromatique and some pumpkin ice cream. It was for Oktoberfest.
That's very creative. And we're talking about this too. Those nice sort of cardamom notes, gingerbread notes in this. This is a great fall. I mean, good anytime, like you said, Henry.
No, you're
great,
right.
Great in a mule, you know.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, I've had to give it a little bit of thought, and I came across, you know, various bartenders that are creative and saw how nice it is for summer drinks. But where it comes from, Neudietendorf, that part that was formerly East Germany, about 2.5 hours as an indication, geographic indications, about 2.5 hours east of Frankfurt.
Okay.
So that kind of gives people an idea. They use it there for the Christmas grog, you know. Glühwein, as they say in Germany.
Right.
They use red wine and the aromatique and cinnamon and a couple of other things, you know, citrus and so on. And we had it when we were there. We were there in, what was it, February when we were there? It was still cold. It was sort of the end of the season for this, but it's delicious. But most of the time here, you know, I live in San Diego. It's warm there. It's warm here in New Orleans. So I kind of like it in as a replacement for vodka and a mule.
You know what pops into my head too, Henry, just because of the spicy notes that we're talking about being warm stuff in tiki drinks. You could quite easily use this in place of allspice dram, I think.
Yeah, I think you could. Yeah, I think absolutely. Actually, that's a really good tip. I'm going to remember that.
I've earned my pay today for what that's worth.
The beautiful thing about this product is without it having any herbs in it, you don't get the green bitter. You really get a pure spice bitter.
Absolutely.
Which behaves differently in a cocktail.
Yeah, and there's no genipi and, you know, which those are wonderful products. Mm-hmm. But when you're looking for something without them, again, I put it in the Amaro category because of the way it's made, and it's a bitter liqueur, so it fits in that category. But it's a German product, and aromatique is a category, like Nicole mentioned. Mm-hmm. There were multiple aromatique companies, so it's a category like Fernet, Amaro, so on, and they all just, because they were communist, they couldn't function under capitalism, and this company, through really, you know, fighting claw and nail to hang on, managed to save that one brand so far. It's a husband and wife, and they're just amazing people.
Wonderful.
It's a great product.
Let's taste something else.
All right.
It's all tantalizing, so I want to make sure we get through at least some of the stuff that we still have to get through.
Well, I think what I really want to show is if there's something in more recent years that people know Henry Price and Price Imports for, it is Luxardo Maraschino.
Sure. Okay, that's yours. Okay.
Well, it's not mine anymore.
Was. Yes. Okay.
It was, and it's a, you know, it is a fabulous product. It's a wonderful product. Nothing to be said there. And I just felt that while we didn't want to repeat what we did in the old company, I felt that it's a product that can be made in different ways. And so I worked with a wonderful company in Torino, Italy, to make a maraschino and make it totally different. What we do here is instead of having cherry juice that's distilled and then aged the way Luxardo does, which is a very unique process they have, and it's a dry maraschino.
Yep.
This one, on the other hand, is more of a wet maraschino, and it has a lot more almond flavor because the seeds are crushed, and when you crush the seed and you have the pit inside the seed, well, that's bitter almond. And so then it starts with that bitter almond flavor and finishes with just a hint of the Amarena cherry. So it lends itself to a different variety of cocktails and also maybe a little easier to drink straight. And we've had really good reception. I mean, there's not a lot of good maraschinos out there in variations. We have a lot of Amaros. We have a lot of everything. Mm-hmm. We don't have variation in much maraschino. So we've had an amazing reception to the product.
I would certainly, and I know this is a sort of a classic old drink, and there's another, well, hearing, obviously, but this would be a great Singapore Sling friend here. But Luxardo doesn't quite do it for me. This, I think, would.
Yeah, you know, I agree, you know. I think that I've had Luxardo mixed into drinks, and it's, like, amazing with a good bartender. And mm-hmm. then I've had mm-hmm. others, like you said, that, you know, I just felt that they become maybe a little bit too acidic, too dry.
Yep.
This one kind of brings a different balance into that. So it's not that we're, you know, I think there's a lot of room out there.
Absolutely.
And Luxardo is the absolute leader, and it's an incredible family company. And with this one, I think we go a different direction, and we could sit side by side in a bar and go into different cocktails.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is great. Let's do one more before we take
great.
A break.
All right. So there was no way we could avoid doing a product from a company in Torino called Tuve. They are the only producer in the city of Torino that actually sits in the city still. They're one of the younger companies, totally run by young people, a wonderful group of young people. And Torino is also the jazz capital of Italy.
Right. Very famous jazz festival, as we were talking about before.
As we talked about during the recess. So they are the major sponsor in Torino of the jazz festival. And as an ode to that festival, they created Black Note Amaro. And they also made it a somewhat lighter style Amaro, either easy to mix into drinks like an old-fashioned or like that. So it kind of bridges between vermouth and heavier, richer Amaros because they want people to be drinking it during the jazz festival and drink several of them.
That makes sense. A little bit lower ABV that we can kind of...
It's a very delicate, like very nice, fruit-forward. There is genepi and some of the classic ingredients. They use a lot of the botanicals that come out of that region, the Piedmont area.
I get a lot more of the fruit notes and red mm-hmm. fruit notes up front and in the mid palate, but still has that nice dryness that to me makes what Amaro is, in this case Italian.
Yeah.
You know,
well, and you know, the thing with Amaros in Italy is it is a really true Italian category. And I know we talked about aromatique and I put it in that category. But in Italy, Amaros were something that goes way back. And, you know, if we take ourselves back historically, it was a time period, not when people had, you know, cars and trucks and things and they went thousands of miles away and brought ingredients. Amaros were made with the botanicals that were within a reasonable distance
right.
of where you produced. Hence, if it's Montenegro or any of the other brands, they're totally unique. And trying to stay with that heritage, they went for quite a bit of the botanicals that are available in the Piedmont region. Hence, you know, now the oranges that are in here are blood orange. There's rhubarb in there. Uh-huh. It's all southern Italy stuff. The rhubarb is northern Italy and things. So, but still, there's a lot of botanicals in here that are from the local region to give it authenticity.
Okay, great. This is really, really delicious. Well, let's do this, y'all. This is wonderful as well. Everything's been great. We're going to take a little break here on the show, and we're going to bring in another special guest who's been sitting here patiently waiting to talk to us. So, friends, come on back to the Nola Drink Show. We'll be right back.
Local
Locally inspired and nationally recognized, Dickey Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter. Dickey Brennan Steakhouse serves USDA prime beef, Gulf seafood, and innovative Creole dishes. Come experience why Maxim Magazine and Playboy named it among the nation's top steakhouses. Running short on time? The full menu is available in the bar for quicker and more casual dining. Dickey Brennan's 5 After 5 Happy Hour Special is back. Dickey Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter at 716 Iberville.
Looking for a bottle of wine to impress your friends and family? Miro Cellars from California's Russian River Valley is the perfect wine for any occasion. Miro Cellars searches the region for the finest grapes to make their one-of-a-kind specialty wines. Award-winning winemaker Miro Chelikov considers the particular geology and seasonal climate of each vineyard when selecting the most interesting grapes the region has to offer. Because Miro has complete freedom to make precisely the wines he loves best, the results are spectacular. Let yourself in on one of the best-kept secrets in wine today, Miro Cellars.
Are you looking for a great place to enjoy great handcrafted and vintage cocktails? Victory is located at 339 Barone Street in the heart of downtown New Orleans. We have a variety of spirits, a talented team of bartenders, and great gourmet small plates. Our mission? To preserve an era when cocktails were made with artistry and pride. Grab your friends and come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. Give us a call to book your next private event or go to our website, victorynola.com. See you soon. Cheers.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Nola Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans, here at Tales of the Cocktail 2017. As you know, we are in the home stretch, friends. One more day. I'm just going to leave it like that. We're chatting with friends here from Price Imports, out of San Diego, which is a cool place. A little biased. I'm not going to go down that road. But waiting patiently here as part of the group and part of the team is Claudia Bailoni. And thanks for being here. And thanks for and Henry's here with us as well. But
thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So we were going to start with a little bit. You make a really interesting apricot liqueur, and we were going to jump in with a little bit of history, and then we're going to do some tasting and. So whoever wants to
it. You know, part of what we like to do at Price Imports is obviously work with family companies. And when Nicole and I started the company, one of our goals was, to the greatest extent we can, to bring back some of the products that either my father back in the 60s imported or that I imported through some of my other companies. And one of the people I reached out to was Bailoni. And lo and behold, they hadn't connected with a different importer in the U.S. And I jumped on it. Because it's just a beautiful product that comes out of Wachau, Austria. And now we're lucky to have Claudia with us until February of 2018. And I'm going to let you let her say a little bit about her wonderful company.
Thank you, Henry. So as I represent my family company here in New Orleans, we are located in Lower Austria, which is formed by the Danube Valley, Wachau. We harvest our own apricots. We have approximately 1,500 trees on our own. Wow. And we continuously grow. We plant approximately 100 trees every year. We are a very small family business. We have 20 employees at high season. And we lay a strong emphasis on tradition. And also we...
Can I ask you a question, yeah, Claudia?
Sure.
What is the lifespan of the apricot tree?
They can get very, very old.
So you're expanding production. You're not replacing ones that are...
We replace who got destroyed through thunderstorms or who broke down because they were too heavy. They carried too much apricots and they just split in half.
Right. Okay.
Gotcha. We're replacing them. And as I told you that we have so many trees... Someone has to harvest them, right?
Uh-huh.
That's me.
Oh, okay. All of them by yourself?
With my dad or with my mom.
Okay.
So we are two people.
Wow, for the whole process.
It's going to get a little difficult since she's here now with us.
Yeah.
So they're going to be short a harvester.
Yeah, the harvest is right now. The harvest starts in the middle of July until August. And so we're right in the middle of it. So I'm here. They are doing...
They're doing the harvest. Yeah. Are you enjoying the break?
I do.
We'll make sure they don't hear this. All right. So that's fantastic. It's really, really delicious. And we were talking a little bit during the break how the varietal of apricot that you grow is very different than typically what we see in the grocery stores in the United States anyway.
So it all started in 1872 when my great-great-grandfather moved to Lower Austria because of love. We are originally from northern Italy. And he came from a grappa dynasty, so he had the skill and the knowledge of processing fruits. And he wanted to continue his passion, and he was amazed by the apricots who grew all over the Bajau Valley. And he was like, I can create something very, very different and unique. So he tried to distill them, make apricot liquor, apricot schnapps, which is different to the definition of schnapps, which is in the United States.
Yeah, well, please tell us so the listeners know. I think that's important.
Yes. So schnapps in the U.S., written with double P, has a very low alcohol percentage, mm-hmm. around 15%, right? It's sweet, and that's the big difference. Austrian schnapps is... the apricots are fermented and distilled 3 times and then aged for 2 years. It's not sweet. It has 40% alcohol. You can compare it to an eau de vie.
Right. That's a better comparison than what a lot of people know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. We are very, very proud of our products because we have decade-long knowledge of processing apricots, and this is our trademark.
Excellent. Now, have you been growing considerably as a company in recent years?
Yes.
We have 20 people working. Have you been hiring more people, expanding production?
We try to stay small. You know, we want to keep this family atmosphere, and we do most of all our own in our family. So during the high season, we don't have weekends. My father is in the cellar and making the apricot liquor on a Sunday.
And is it basically made the same way as it's been passed down from generation to
generation? Yes, we perfectionized the procedure mm-hmm. over the decades. However, the principle is still the same. We lay very strong emphasis that we have the recipe we had 100 years ago. Sorry for my accent.
I don't want to have Claudia forget to talk about the newest product they worked on for over 2 years.
Yep. So this just came out then, brand new.
Yeah.
It actually hasn't even come out in the U.S. yet.
Oh, wonderful. Okay.
She'll talk a little bit about it.
Yeah, please.
So a little bit over a month now, we launched a new product, an apricot frizzante, which is a sparkling wine with apricot fruit juice. It's a very, very... low alcohol percentage, six volume percent.
Okay. Oh, wow.
Yes.
Okay.
It's a perfect summer drink, and the specialty is the fruit pulp doesn't collect itself on the ground. It stays mixed in the bottle. It's 100% organic product. We have no additives, no coloring in it, and we did over 2 years of research to create this because nothing like that is out in the market. If you compare other fruit-based infused sparkling wines, and they are not mixed in color, that means they're artificial. Because
you're adding dye, right? Or adding color.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is really, really wonderful. We were talking during the break a little bit, too, about how, at least all of our listeners here in New Orleans, this works well in New Orleans. This works well by itself. I would actually think this would work really nice in some cocktails as well, though.
Yes, definitely. We have a very fun tradition. So it's a cocktail named Monkey Water. It's a mix between the apricot liqueur and the apricot schnapps, 1-to-1. And we drink it all over in all the festivals.
I like it. What was it, Claudia? What was the name again?
Monkey Water.
Monkey Water. Okay, I like it. This is wonderful. Very nice.
We have normally in Austria we drink a spirit straight.
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
We have this is our traditional way of consuming it. However, we can observe a shift in this category. More and more people. Tend to cocktails, and we want to stay innovative and create more and to really bring out the apricot, our liquor, to the bars and say, here you can do infuse it with a bit of lemon soda, a little bit of bitters,
right?
Okay. Ice cubes, done, perfect,
yeah,
simple.
Actually, very nice. I said, like you said, with a little bit of an ice cube and even something like an Angostura bitters with a little savory note would be really, really nice with this. This is wonderful.
Yeah, and what Nicole just mixed is a little of the apricot schnapps and the liqueur. And I actually like this drink a lot. I like to take a little bit of shaved ice. Personally, I like 2-to-1. It takes the apricot liqueur sweetness way down, and it elevates the flavor of the schnapps. And it's just a So it's an apricot martini, and right. made just with Bailoni product. You know, not using a gin, not using a vodka, but actually using a distillate from the same fruit. Mm. And very refreshing, really just a nice drink.
It's very, very refreshing. Thank you. All very creative. Everything we've tasted today has been great. Can you all do me a favor, because we have about 45 seconds left. Tell us, Claudia, where can we find information online?
Yes, you can find information online on the website from priceimports.com, or check out our homepage, bailoni.at.
Okay.
AT. And you can also find our product description there, and also family history, how we process them, and also some...
Can people visit? Do you have
yes.
A, okay.
Yes. If you are in Austria,
yeah.
Just phone us. We make an appointment and we show you our distillery, have a tasting. It's for free.
Oh, I like that even better. Wonderful. And really quick, so Henry, tell us where the website. I know Claudia just said that, but just how we connect with the portfolio here, with the stuff that you guys do.
Yeah, so the website is priceimports.com, and it looks like Price, but it's Price. It's German.
P-R-E-I-S-S.
Look at Brian.
We well, I got a business card in front of me. I'm slow on the uptake, so Henry.
So it is priceimports.com. And we will be revamping the website with more recipes and better graphics and more information. But there is good information there right now as well.
Great. Thank you so much, all three of you, for being on today. Nicole and Henry Price, Claudia Bailoni, thank you so much for being here. And we'll circle back. I know you're going to be back in town somewhat soon, so we'll do this again.
Fantastic. Thank you, Brian. Absolutely. Thanks for having us.
Our pleasure. Friends, thanks for tuning into the NOLA Drink Show. We've got a little bit more. Come on back.
Hi, this is Kevin Richards with Sazerac Rye Whiskey. In 2008, the Louisiana legislature made the Sazerac cocktail the official cocktail of New Orleans, affirming what New Orleanians had known for over 150 years. You just can't beat a good Sazerac. The Sazerac cocktail is the quintessential New Orleans drink, perfect for celebrating the arrival of fall festivals, football season, or just being proud to be a New Orleanian. For the official recipe, visit www.sazerac.com.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region, producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood, or our bold, rich Petit Sirah, excellent with steak, to our flagship Bordeaux-style blend, Supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
Hey, New Orleans, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy. Want a great alternative to Over Oak Chardonnay? Try Yamhill Valley Vineyards Pinot Blanc, a wonderfully balanced white wine from the oldest family estate in McMinnville, Oregon, in the Willamette Valley. It's round and ripe like a Chardonnay, but without the heavy oak and sweetness of big commercial corporate Chardonnays. Yamhill Valley Vineyard Pinot Blanc, a great value under $20. Ask for it wherever you buy wine. Cheers.
The French Market is open daily with pop-up fresh markets on Wednesdays and Saturdays. The Crescent City Farmers Market is at the French Market each Wednesday, rain or shine, from 2 to 6 p.m. On Saturdays from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., find new and different vendors offering everything from fresh bagels to fresh herbs. Vendors change weekly depending on weather and seasons, so check them out often. Visit frenchmarket.org for a list of farmers market vendors, chef demonstrations, live music, and special events.
Are you looking for the best buns? Well, we have them at Bayou Burger in the Quarter. Wait till you bite into one of our acclaimed burgers like the Cowboy Burger, Tiebreaker Shrimp Burger, the world-famous Gator Burger, or you can build your own with endless combinations. It's all fresh meat, never ever frozen. Everywhere you look, there's big screen TVs where you'll never miss a minute of the action. Boasting the largest balcony dining in the French Quarter, you can watch all the action pass you by on the street. Find the best burgers in action at Bayou Burger. 501 Bourbon at St. Louis for the best buns on bourbon. It's Bayou Burger, baby.
Did you know that there's a vineyard and winery making quality table wines just 1 hour north of New Orleans? At Pontchartrain Vineyards, we produce award-winning wines from our 15-acre vineyard, as well as premium wine grapes sourced from the West Coast. Try our light, crisp, Louisiana-grown Blanc du Bois, or have a glass of Chardonnay, Zinfandel, or our Cab Syrah blend made right here in Louisiana. There's something for everyone at Pontchartrain Vineyards. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Locally inspired and nationally recognized, Dickie Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter. Dickie Brennan Steakhouse serves USDA prime beef, Gulf seafood, and innovative Creole dishes. Come experience why Maxim Magazine and Playboy named it among the nation's top steakhouses. Running short on time? The full menu is available in the bar for quicker and more casual dining. Dickie Brennan's 5 After 5 Happy Hour Special is back. Dickie Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter. It's 716 Iberville.
Everyone, we got to get together now. Oh, yeah.
Everybody, welcome back to the Noel Drink Show. Brian D is here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Yes, Tales of the Cocktail 2017, here we are, you know that. We're covering the whole week here. And lots of interesting people to talk to, lots of interesting things to taste, as you know and can imagine. And this is no exception. Pleased to be joined by two great guests. First off, Dr. Ajinor Makari and Luke McKinley, who are both with Nova Fogo Cachaça. Gentlemen, welcome.
Thank you very much for having us, Brian.
Absolutely, my pleasure, Luke. And Ajinor, it's nice to see you. I saw you yesterday.
Wow. Yeah. It's a pleasure to see you and talking to American people.
Thank you.
I am a Brazilian guy.
Yeah, and there you go. So Cachaça is from Brazil, as is Ajinor. And it's a very unique category. We tasted yesterday at the Irvin Mayfield Jazz Playhouse. And can you guys tell us a little bit about what is Cachaça?
At its most basic level, cachaça is sugarcane distillate from Brazil, and specifically it's distilled from fresh cane juice. So it's in that way it's sort of an older cousin to the rum category, also made with sugarcane. But most rums are made from molasses, and cachaça is very unique in that, number one, it comes from Brazil, and number two, it comes from fresh cane juice.
So if people are rum enthusiasts, would that be something similar to an agricole? Is that this, that kind of idea?
Yeah. Okay. We say that cachaça and rum agricole are like close brothers on the family tree of cane spirits, because they're both distilled from fresh cane juice, but there are also differences in terroir of where the sugar cane grows. And maybe Ajinor, you can speak a little bit to what differentiates
there
the
are
two.
Some difference in the process, because to cachaça, our cachaça specifically, we press the sugar cane only one time.
Okay.
And to distill, we are using pot still, copper pot still, and the distillation is made only one time. No double distillation.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, so the quality of the sugar cane is incredibly important then?
Absolutely, because sugar cane is the raw ingredient for cachaça. And because that sugar cane is not processed, it's critical that we have the cleanest, most flavorful sugar cane that eventually becomes the spirit in your glass.
Right.
Yesterday, I was talking in a bar with a specialist, and this guy compared cachaça and wine, because the buffs, the raw matter is very important.
Right.
Yeah. I believe in this. I agree. I agree.
Right. Thank you for that point. And I think we talk a lot about this on the show, that understanding certain spirits like cachaça, pisco, mezcal, these things are terroirs is very, very important. And it really does matter. Terroir matters greatly. And like wine, as you said, and a lot of people that are obviously listening to the show are wine drinkers. And I always thank you for that point, because I want to make it clear that this is the case. A terroir is a huge part of this.
Absolutely. Within Brazil, there are thousands of distilleries. There are over 4,000 distilleries of cachaça.
That's incredible.
Just in Brazil. It's a massive category. And only 1% of the volume of cachaça produced in Brazil actually makes it out of the country. So just within the country of Brazil, which is in and of itself a big place, there is tremendous diversity. And a lot of that is due to the different types of microclimates and regions where cachaça is produced.
Soils.
Yeah, the soil is different.
Yeah. If there are difference between south and north of Brazil, it's possible extend to the Central America, to Caribbean, to rum production. right. are totally different. And there is another question. We are talking about the sugar cane, but it's possible talking about the woods. The woods.
The wood, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Room used to aged American oak, European oak, but oak. Why? Oh, Scotch whisky use oak, brandies, cognac, oak.
Yep.
No, in Brazil, it's possible use local Brazilian woods to age the cachaça. The terroir.
Absolutely.
Yeah, to buff, to how matter sugar cane and to the wood. Yeah.
Well, you guys, what about water? Because water is obviously important in the process.
Absolutely. Right? And so at the Novo Fogo Distillery, to paint a picture for you, Brian, if you were to stand at our distillery, you would look out on sugar cane fields that bump up against the Atlantic rainforest, the preserved area of this thin strip of rainforest along the Atlantic coast, where our distillery building is at, outside of a very small town in southern Brazil, the city of Mojetes. And on our property, where our sugarcane plantation and distillery operation are in the same place, there's a small stream that serves as our water source, just a very clean source of water for our cachaça.
Yeah, we are producing our sugar cane in a tropical area, okay? We have in our property, in our farm, half of the hour is used to sugar cane and another to forest. We are preserving the forest, okay? And this Atlantic forest is very special because the rain is amazing. 3 meters of water.
Wow.
Each year.
Every year. Wow.
Drops yeah. in the sky.
Wow. That is a lot of rain.
Yeah. 3,000 yeah. milliliters.
And we can we understand rain here in New Orleans, but mm-hmm. not that much
yeah.
usually.
And rainfall is really, in addition to being a key part of the process of making spirits, for us as sugarcane growers, and we've chosen to grow organic sugarcane at Novo Fogo Cachaça, mm-hmm. Rain is one of the key ingredients that we put on our sugarcane fields. You know, we don't use any artificial chemical pesticides or herbicides. It's really... Yeah, artificial fertilizers.
And here in this country, it is a USDA certified organic product, correct?
That's correct. Yeah. That's correct. Yeah. Yeah. So this is an entirely natural spirit.
And you mentioned you said that cachaça is maybe the older cousin of rum. How old is cachaça? How long has cachaça been being made?
The first records of cachaça being made in Brazil are around 1529.
Okay.
And the first records of rum being produced in the Caribbean are almost 100 years later in the 17th century. So,
the sugar production is the second economic activity in Brazil.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. And
what's first?
Extractivism.
Oh,
Pau okay. Brasil.
Okay.
Yeah, the Brazilian wood use it to
lumber.
Give
lumber
number
industry.
One
lumber,
number
yeah.
one
yeah.
to give head color to the Portugal and the Spanish, the kings, the
right,
real.
Right.
Okay, and unhappy. Okay, the first economic activity in the past was destroyed the forest.
right.
Unhappy, sorry.
So sugar cane and sugar production is the second largest industry in Brazil.
Yeah, massive.
Because the ethanol production in Brazil.
From the ethanol. Oh, ethanol production, sure. Okay.
Our cars using ethanol to road.
Right.
Brazil, pretty much all cars are flex fuel vehicles
right.
that can run on either ethanol or gasoline. And so there's a lot of crossover between the ethanol production industry and the cachaça industry. They're essentially both distilling alcohol from a fresh plant of sugarcane.
Sugarcane plants, industrial plants, it's possible to produce ethanol, cachaça, and sugar.
Right.
Okay. So, because this, we have large areas with sugar cane, okay? But it's sugar cane, soybean, and corn, okay?
Right.
Brazil is an agricultural country. It's very, very strong.
And very diverse, as you said. I mean, people also, it's a big country.
Yeah.
So the diversity of agriculture is extensive.
Absolutely. Yeah. And also the diversity within the cachaça industry. Cachaças vary widely in their flavor profiles and their traditions. And just as the languages, the cuisines and cultures within Brazil are also very different as you go from a very African north and a very European south, and everything in between has been a grand experiment in mixing and acculturation over the years.
All right. Well, you guys, let's do this. Let's take perfect timing. Let's take a little break here for a commercial, as we do here on the Noel Drink Show, and we're going to be right back. So we're chatting with Hajnor Makari and Luke McKinley of Novo Fogo Cachaça. We're going to taste some when we come on back, friends, so stay tuned. There's a trunk in the corner. I keep all my letters, my
bills, and the man's a kid too. Are you tired of drinking the same wines? Switch it up. Try the Kreutz Family Cellars wine. Kreutz Family Cellars is a small, family-owned winery in Sonoma County that makes wines from some of the most prized vineyards throughout Northern California. Each bottle of Kreutz Family Cellars wines has a magnolia on the label. The magnolia is a symbol of the family's southern roots and their way of life. True, honest, and fun. Look for the magnolia and pick up a bottle of Kreutz Family Cellars wines today.
Hi, New Orleans. It's Laura from Sobu, and I'm here with Chef Juan Carlos.
Sobu's got happier hour. It's 3 to 6 from 3 to 6.
It's bar bars, sips, and snacks, all for $3 to $6 from 3 to 6 p.m. every day.
Laura's got something to please everyone at the bar for happier hour, all for 3 to 6 here at Sobu.
And we know you'll want to try a smoky pulled pork taco or any of the other delicious snacks on our happier hour menu.
Sobu's happier hour, every day from 3 to 6, 310 Charter Street in the quarter.
Complimentary parking next door at the W Hotel.
Savory crab meat cheesecake and decadent white chocolate bread pudding are Palace Cafe originals. For nearly 26 years, Palace Cafe has been serving award-winning cuisine in the historic Warline Music Building. Located on Canal Street at the edge of the French Quarter, Palace Cafe is open 7 days a week for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and open for jazz brunch on the weekends. Make sure to try one of their refined classic cocktails or a glass of wine from their nationally recognized wine list. Palace Cafe is located at 605 Canal Street.
Things are okay with me these days. Got a good job, got a good office. I got a new wife, got a new life, and the family is fine.
GSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land wherever you may be. Tales of the Cocktail 2017. Friends, we are chatting with Hajnor and Luke from Novo Fogo Cachaça, which is a traditional brilliant. It is brilliant and Brazilian as well.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, there you go. distillate from Brazil. That's what I'm trying to say. And we're tasting some stuff. Tell us a little bit about Novo Fogo itself.
Novo Fogo is a brand of organic cachaça that began in 2010. And the distillery in Brazil was opened in the state of Paraná, which is in the southern part of the country, opened in 2004. So been producing cachaça and organic sugar cane for quite some
planting
time.
Planting sugar cane and 1 year.
Yeah, yeah.
1 year before.
Right okay. on. Yeah, yeah.
But the cachaça production starts in 2004.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Novo Fogo is a brand that prioritizes not just silver cachaça, as many people are accustomed to seeing or drinking in caipirinha cocktails, mm-hmm. but also a line of cachaças that are aged in barrels. So they are brown in color, and they look like whiskey, aged tequila, or aged rum on the shelf.
Right. And you guys have, and as you said, most people, if they're familiar with cachaça, are familiar with white cachaça. How many cachaças do you have? You have many.
We do. So we have three core cachaças, a silver, a 1 year barrel aged, and a 2 year barrel aged. We have soon to be three cachaças in our Two Woods series, which is a cachaça that spends time first in American oak barrels and then in indigenous Brazilian woods, and we'll talk about that in a little bit as we sip on it. And then we have an ever-shifting line of single-barrel cachaças. And Hajnor, maybe you can explain what makes a single-barrel cachaça unique.
We have more than 400 barrels in the distilleries, and I use this oak barrels to produce the core products. Okay, barrel aged and chameleon. But I need take samples every 6 months and taste each barrels. And sometimes I found the special mm-hmm. barrels. In this situation, I take the barrel and it's possible use these barrels to produce a single cask or single barrel cachaça. Cask strength, a special cachaça. It's possible find 1 year aged, a special cachaça, 2 years aged or more, but is the select our reserve.
Exactly, okay. Yeah. It's a barrel that is especially delicious, yeah. And they could range in age from just 1 year, as young as 1 year, all the way up to, I think, 9 years was the oldest that we have released in the past. And these only come out when they're ready, and we only release one barrel at a time. They're obviously not blended with other barrels.
Now, Achenor, you mentioned yesterday that in, say, the one-year aged barrel, cachaça, that sometimes you will blend a 3 or a 4 year, some a little bit of older stuff, yeah, into the blend.
To Chameleon, 1 year aged is the minimum time.
Right, okay.
Okay, but to obtain a consistency in color, aroma, and flavor is possible, I will use 10 or 3 or 4 years aged barrel, mm-hmm, because we are producing a small batch, 2,000 liters, okay, each batch. To obtain 2,000 liters, it's necessary 10 or 12 barrels, okay? Mm-hmm. And between these 12 barrels, 1, 2, or 3 more aged cachaça.
Mm. Right.
Okay? Okay. So minimum 1 year. To to a barrel aged, 2 years is the minimum.
Is the minimum.
Yeah.
So I want people to understand that, and the idea is maybe similar to sherry production or scotch production. It's a similar type of approach in philosophy.
Not
specifically.
Yeah, so it's not, it doesn't use a Solera method producers do, but rather it's a process of blending and fine-tuning and understanding the chemistry as well as the sensorial aspects of cachaça. And sometimes a young, vibrant cachaça is different than an older, more sophisticated cachaça. But when you mix the two, it's something entirely new and entirely different. And something to take note of, actually, is that, you know, our barrel aging rooms are in the middle of a very humid jungle, and there is so much variability between barrel to barrel. And single barrel cachaças can never be replicated. You can never repeat it in the future. And so there's tremendous variation from two barrels sitting side by side with liquid in them that have been sitting for the same amount of time.
Thank you, because that was actually one of my questions, is what makes a special barrel a special barrel? And I know it's a unique set of circumstances, right?
Yeah. As normal, I say, I am looking for the best cachaça to me.
Right. That's a good...
I offer my best cachaça to the consumer.
Yeah. I trust you.
Yeah, so. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It is good to trust a man who has a PhD in agricultural science and understands every chemical reaction in a barrel of cachaça.
Right. So we're tasting, I'm tasting the silver right now. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So Novo Fogo Silver Cachaça is clear in color, and it spends 1 year of its life resting in a stainless steel tank, giant stainless steel tank. How many thousands of liters are our Enox tanks?
35,000
liters at a time. And this allows all of the flavors and chemical compounds to harmonize and really create a smooth and drinkable silver cachaça.
Very, very much so. Well, and you guys, we have about 3 minutes, so I want to make sure we get to the next one. Let's do this.
So the next one, this is Novo Fogo Barrel Age Cachaça. And this is the same liquid as silver cachaça that spends, on average, 2 years in repurposed American oak bourbon barrels. So it's gold, almost honey in color. And Agenor, this is one of your special creations over the years. Yeah. So can you explain what makes this so special briefly?
Explosion of aromas, vanilla, cookies, toffee in the nose, and in the mouth is amazing. It's a brilliant cachaça, very smooth, and very easy to drink.
A very nice nut note.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And that's American oak. It shares affinity with other American oak aged spirits.
This cachaça, barrel aged cachaça, Novo Fogo barrel aged cachaça, is the best cachaça in Brazil. It's the number one in the national ranking.
That's okay? Right. Last year in 2016, a national ranking of cachaças chose this cachaça, Novo Fogo barrel aged, the liquid.
The number one between 4,000 brands.
4,000 labels, and ours was chosen the best.
Amazing.
That's amazing.
So, and we have Two Woods project, okay?
Okay.
Cachaça aged in oak barrels, after 1.5 years, and moved this cachaça to Brazilian wood barrels. And Colibri Hummingbird, the cachaça aged is finished in Brazilian teak amburana. Brazilian teak barrels toasted. It's amazing.
It is amazing.
It's amazing. Yep. Winner. A winner. Gold medal in San Francisco Awards competition.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah. This is a beauty. The diversity is really striking. And I want people to understand the diversity of flavor profile from one to the next is very, very striking. And what the wood program does, and the one we tasted yesterday, too, I know, with zebra wood, the tanager, mm-hmm, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Was incredibly unique and very red in color and a very, very unique.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, we could speak all day long about the Brazilian woods used in cachaça production, but to make a very long story short, Brazil is home to tremendous biodiversity, and some of those trees have long been used in cachaça aging. And so right now, as a company, Novo Fogo is looking for productive ways to protect some of these trees, many of which are on the endangered species lists and prohibited from being cut down. Brazil has a problem with deforestation in many of its regions.
Right, right.
And so that's the Novo Fogo Colibri that we're tasting is a good symbol of our ethos of sustainability, trying to have as little of an impact on our natural environment as we can and produce exquisite, delicious cachaça.
Beautiful. And recycled glass packaging?
Recycled glass bottles, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Yeah. Well, you guys, thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you for sharing and tasting.
It's been so fun.
It's been a great time, you guys. And I hope you enjoy New Orleans. And
thank you.
I hope to come pay you a visit, Agenor, in Brazil. And then let me know when you're going to be down
there. I think you should. There's a lot of cachaça to taste down there, my friend.
Right on. We'll get you out of Seattle and down to Brazil. I'm sure you do that often. But thank you, guys. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Take care.
Absolutely. Friends, we were just chatting with Agenor and Luke from Novo Fogo Cachaça. A very interesting category. Be on the lookout for it. It is around in New Orleans. And anywhere else you're listening, you can probably find it, too, and it's a beautiful brand, great product.
Hey, thanks for listening, friends. Just a quick note here from the studio before we close out the show. Hope you enjoyed the interviews today, friends. We'll be back with another show next week, so tune in there. Be sure to check out the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and TuneIn Radio. Friends, a quick note also to be safe out there. Hurricane Henry there is in the Gulf, probably going to give us maybe a little bit of a side swipe in the coming days. We're at least going to get a lot of rain, so be careful out there. If you're not prepared yet, go out and get prepared and be kind to one another. Friends, until then, cheers, y'all.